Okay, Bradley, special episode time. How's it going?
Good, good. Coming a day out of the iPad announcement, or I guess iPad and iPhone SE. So
yeah,
it's one of the shortest keynotes I've seen in a while, only an hour.
Yeah, it was. It definitely had a feeling of here are the things we're done.
Well, I am so much less interested in hardware announcements as I am software. Like, the really, I think I texted you at the WWDC keynote where they unveiled the new version of iOS is really the only one that I get super, super excited about now. Because even the iPhone announcement, like, you kind of generally always know what's hardware-wise, what it's going to be. And then we've already seen the software, so.
The thing is that the things that they do in Cupertino stay a secret better than the things that they do, you know, overseas. So we often see the things that are, you know, the hardware, but not the software. And I think in many ways that the stuff that I was most excited about was iOS 9.3 finally shipping, and then starting to see more information come out about some of the new configuration stuff we can do. Apple Classroom, we'll talk about that a little bit, and so on. Whereas the iPad stuff is interesting because this is the iPad I'm going to live with for the next 3 years. But in terms of the iPhone SE, we know what it is, and we've seen the design, mostly the design before, and we've seen the internals before. It was last year's iPhone 6. iPhone 6, I suppose, yeah, 6S. So, yeah, I don't know. I still have a sort of warm regard for smaller phones, but I don't know if I could ever go back. I like the price, though.
I think the starting price for $299 is mm-hmm. Was that it? There was a $299. Yeah, still for 16 gig. I wish that would go away, but that's not a bad price. I could see this here in the U.S. being the phone people buy when they break theirs and they don't have insurance.
Yeah, it's a sort of the emergency iPhone, if you like.
Correct.
And certainly, I see a lot. I imagine a lot of kids will be carrying that phone.
Absolutely, absolutely, and it does have Touch ID, although it is the first generation one. Mm-hmm. But it does have obviously lightning port and great camera. So, I don't think I could ever go back, but I could see my wife buying that phone for her next iPhone.
Yeah, and I mean, I was looking at my mobile phone company where they're forcibly changing my contract at the moment. So that's not kind of in the nature of contracts, but there you go. So I was looking at the price of maybe like upgrading my iPhone, and oh my goodness, the price of, you know, a new iPhone 6S Plus on a contract in the UK, you're talking like £50 a month minimum. So maybe I'll go into the SE anyway, just for cost purposes.
Yeah. You know, you won't go back to the old one.
No, I don't. I don't think I can, but I don't know.
So iPad Pro 9.7. Mm-hmm. So obviously seeing some branding change. The iPad, there is no iPad Air 3.
This is not at all confusing.
Yeah, it's it got worse. The iPad lineup got worse for schools, I think. Differences from like the 12-inch iPad Pro, obviously screen size. Mm-hmm. Does have two. So you did confirm 2 gigs of RAM.
Matthew Panzerino from TechCrunch posted a Geekbench screenshot on the new iPad Pro, and it was measuring 2 gigs of RAM.
Okay, so in the iPad Pro, 12-inch has 4, USB 2 Lightning port, not 3, 12-megapixel camera with 4K flash, 4K camera. I'm sorry. And the backside flash as well.
Yeah, I mean, first iPad with a flash on it. Could be interesting, I don't know. Use it as a torch. I wonder if it'll have the flashlight button in Control Center. I don't know about that.
Oh, that'll be interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
Be a kind of a different version of iOS per device size.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, anything there that stands out as being particularly good or particularly bad, do you think, Bradley?
I think these are just, I would kind of equate this to the difference between the going MacBook Air versus like Retina MacBook Pro, mm-hmm. kind of backing out the screen size. It's like, do you want ultimate portability or do you want raw power? And I think if you're the type of person that uses your iPad as a secondary type device, this is a great iPad for you, mm-hmm. Because you're probably not going to see the differences between the 2 gigs of RAM and 4 gigs of RAM if it's a secondary device for you.
Yeah.
But again, if this is like your primary device, you want to get the 4 gigs of RAM. You want the USB 3 port.
Yeah, the USB 3 port, I think, is primarily affects people who might be using like a DSLR and downloading, you know, CF cards onto their iPad Pro, because that the new Lightning to Compact Flash adapter could download from the cards at USB 3 speeds. I don't know that that's going to be an everyday occurrence for most schools. But you know, if you're the photography teacher, then maybe yes, it is. But The only thing that slightly concerned me about this was the 2 gigs of RAM versus the 4. But on reflection, I'm wondering how much of that 4 gigs of RAM is there to give enough video RAM headroom for the 12-inch display. Because on iOS, the RAM is shared with the VRAM. So it's not clear to me that that is necessarily, in practice, will be much of a problem. I guess we'll just have to wait and see. But I know from using multitasking on, say, an iPad Air 2 that also has 2 gigs of RAM, that wasn't particularly unpleasant to use. So I don't know that that's necessarily a deal breaker.
Yeah, I don't either. And I don't think most schools are even considering the 12-inch iPad Pro. So it doesn't even matter.
Certainly not for students. For teachers, maybe, yes, I can see that, but not for students. And I don't think anybody who's got a 12-inch iPad Pro will be too upset that they don't have as good a camera as a smaller iPad. I just don't see the 12-inch iPad as being... I mean, the camera's there for data capture, yes, but it's not... It doesn't seem to be as much of a photography tool.
Now, one of the things we did get on the 12-inch is there, and on the 9.7, is there now a 256 gig option on storage?
That was quite surprising. I did not see that coming. And I think it must only be these people who are doing all the 4K video editing on iPads that would need something that large. I mean, I use iOS intensively, and I don't ever really come close to filling my 128 gig iPad. But it's nice to see the ambition of them building that option.
It is. It certainly is. And 9.7-inch iPad Pro, obviously, says some new storage ranges as well, but we'll cover that later. But mm-hmm. Let's look at the similarities between these two. Both of them get the A9X processor, which I think is the key. I would say this is the key feature of the iPad Pro lineup, is this A9X. This is a fast, fast processor.
Yeah, it's crazy fast. Even compared to the A8 processor in the iPad Air 2, this is, you know, it's nearly twice as fast again. And I think that's really important, particularly, we say this all the time, but it's still true that in situations where you're going to lease a device in 2016 for use in 2019, I still feel that you're going to want to get the fastest device you can get today, so that by the time you get 3 years from now, you're not using a device from 2014, which is what the iPad Air 2 really is.
Right. Four speakers, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Again, not going to affect you in the classroom very much, but it is certainly nice for, you know, at home and things like that. And mm-hmm. then it does get pencil support, which we were both thinking it would, but that is confirmed. Yep.
Yeah, I certainly thought it was more than 50-50 that it would get pencil support. And I think in school, the way the pencil's architected, I think, is perfect for schools, because you don't need to buy one pencil per device. You could buy, we actually titled a show, a class set of Apple Pencil a while ago, because we were joking about this idea, but I think this is actually going to be a reality in several schools, where you might have, in the maths classroom, you might have, you know, a class set of Apple Pencil for doing maths work. And the pencils stay with the subject, but the devices move around. And then when the students get the pencil, they just stick it into the lightning port for 1 second. It pairs with that device, and then they can use that pencil for the session. So I think I can certainly see us getting some Apple Pencils. Under no circumstances will we get one for every student. They would lose them within probably two heartbeats. And I think they need to be looked after much more carefully. So they might be given out in certain subjects, maybe in the art classroom. But I think it's good that, you know, schools have that opportunity. And our primary one teacher, our 5-year-old's teacher, she was telling me she was actually really excited to try the Apple Pencil with younger kids for handwriting practice. So it'll be interesting to see how that develops as well.
Pricing, the big thing is that the iPad Pro 9.7-inch starts at 32 gigs of RAM. So they did kill the 16 gig, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm.
And I know you're about to complain about this.
Yeah, but they did was remove, it's not like they shifted the storage down. No. The entry level price on the iPad Pro 9.7-inch is $599 US and $499 pounds. And so I'm disappointed here. I'm really disappointed here. At $599, the iPad Pro for a lot of schools is going against the Chromebook, which you can get. I mean, I've had emails sent to me, hey, buy us a class set of 30, and it's like $8,000.
Yeah.
I mean, these things are coming in cheap. Now, again, you and I both know they're different style devices, and they have different applications. Both are good devices. But to just raise the price is on a market that, at least on a whole, is not growing that fast, is gutsy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think I get the sense that, I don't know where I get the sense from, except from the prices perhaps, that we might be living with the iPad Air 2 and the 9.7-inch iPad for quite a long time to come. I mean, you and I have both used iPad Air 2, and it is a strong iOS device even today. You know, it is not slow, and it is not hurting for resources. And I suppose you're looking at that being price cut. Not a bad deal. But I think the storage levels are complicated because you've got the iPad Pro at 32, 128, and 256. And then you've got the Air 2 at 16 and 64. So let's assume the 16 gig iPad Air 2 is out. You're looking at the competitive devices are a 32 gig iPad Pro or a 64 gig iPad Air 2. And I'm looking at a £70 saving to get the device with 64 gigs. So you're looking at, you know, $7,000 perhaps in the cost of our deployment to get the faster processor and the Apple Pencil support and so on, whereas you could spend less money and get a more capacious device. Now, because we're one-to-one, storage capacity is not our main thing at the moment, because looking at the stats on our MDM server, our 32-gig iPads are on average 50% full. And that's at the end of a three-year deployment where those devices haven't been reset over the course of those 3 years. So there are people who have been accumulating data for 3 years on those devices, and on average, they're still only half full. So I'm not necessarily concerned about getting the most storage I can possibly get. I'm interested in the performance, but we used to pay $479 for a mid-range full-size iPad, and now it's the entry level is actually up £21 from that. It's now $499 for the mid-range, for the entry level model, albeit the entry level model is a much more capable device than the entry level was, the mid-range was before. So I think you're right. You know, if you look at the iPad Pro as the best iPad, then getting the newest thing has gotten more expensive. But you could make a reasonable case that the Air 2 is still a perfectly good iPad. It's not really, I mean, it is an old model, but, you know, I'm sure somebody at Apple PR would argue, well, it's not actually that old a device, and it has a long runway ahead of it. It's still very powerful. It's got 2 gigs of RAM. The A8 processor is not really that bad, and so on and so on. That's a judgment call. I don't know.
Would you feel any different if it wasn't the Air 2 and it was the Air 3 that came out last year?
What do you mean? So if there was an Air 3 that had an A9 processor? Or?
Right.
Well, I mean, in some ways, you know, how would that be different from the 9.7-inch iPad Pro? You say maybe the physical design doesn't have the pencil support on the screen, does have 2 gigs of RAM. It's just a chip bump on the iPad Air 2. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, and so because we skipped a year on, mm-hmm. on the kind of the mid-size iPad at this point.
Yeah,
and so you know, would it be a different discussion if it was an A9 with 64 gig versus A9X 32 gig with Apple Pencil support?
Well, in that case, I would absolutely be getting the Air 3, this hypothetical Air 3. The pencil support is nice, but given that we're not going to buy a pencil for everybody, and we might only buy a few pencils, I don't think that, like, we're not unlocking a whole new school-wide capability by having Apple Pencil support in the iPad, because we're simply not going to have that many Apple Pencils. So spending all that extra money just to get Apple Pencil support would not make sense. But getting Apple Pencil support is a nice bonus. What I really want is I want that A9 processor for the next 3 years.
Yeah, it's. I think they made the decision easier for you in reality by not having an Air 3 last year.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that holds me back on this is I'm thinking 32, is that absolutely going to be enough? But I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, what is coming on the horizon that's going to double my storage requirements in the next 3 years? Not a lot that I can see.
Probably nothing. And if iCloud gets, if like the iOS as a whole gets better about caching things to iCloud, mm-hmm. You're kind of like what it's doing with the shared iPad model, but like if it can start doing that where removes resources and can re-download them on demand from iCloud and things like that, kind of like it does with the iCloud photo library, mm-hmm. you really might need even less.
Yeah, I think also if managed Apple IDs end up getting more or unlimited iCloud storage, then I think 32 gigs would be perfectly fine and we'd be focusing on other features of the device rather than just the storage capacity as our main driver.
So, We are probably looking for our next one. I'm probably looking at iPad mini 4, 64 gigs is what we're looking at.
Okay. And you're looking for shared iPad in that?
Yeah, probably so. Buying 160 of them.
So we should talk about shared iPad because some more solid information came out about shared iPad.
Yeah, and this was very, very important for schools to know. So system requirements are iPad Pro, iPad Air 2, or iPad mini 4 or greater, and minimum of 32 gigabyte storage.
Yeah, so any device that's based on the A8 processor or newer can be a shared iPad. So that means no iPad mini 1, no mini 2, no iPad Air, and certainly no, you know, third or fourth generation Retina iPads either. So for me, Bradley, this says to me that shared iPad is a model for future iOS deployments, not as a way to retrofit your existing hardware set with new capabilities.
And I am fine with this, these system requirements. I get them technically. Mm-hmm. I think in response to that, they need to no longer sell the Mini 2 or the... do they still sell the Air 1 to schools?
Maybe no, the Air 1 is gone.
Okay. But I know the Mini 2 is still... Mini 2 is still there. So I think the Mini 2 needs to die. And I think the Air 2 at 16 gigabyte needs to die.
I agree because... Or there has to be some kind of like neon lit sign for schools that says, do not buy these products if you want to use shared iPad. Because I know that maybe not buying through Apple channels, but certainly buying through resellers, there will be confusion there. And people will get that wrong. And they'll order 16 gig mini 2s and they'll wonder why they can't use shared iPad and so on. And somebody will have screwed up the technical requirements on that. The other thing with shared iPad is that you have to use managed Apple IDs. So that's because that system's not really rolled out just yet. There's not really a good way to test shared iPad just yet, even though 9.3 has gone final. But once we get managed Apple IDs, we'll see how well that works. I've heard informally people saying they've seen login. People have been to these Apple demo days. They've seen login times of about 20 seconds from start to finish if the device is reasonably well cached. So fingers crossed on that.
Yeah, it should be with 64 gigs.
You would certainly hope so, and particularly if you arrange things so that the same pupils sit down with the same devices as often as possible, and it's not just a free-for-all, then I think you've got a reasonable chance, if you size your device right and manage your classroom well, I think you've got a reasonable chance of not seeing too much traffic when you hit those logins.
Apple School Manager is out today, but it is US only, and the email went out earlier today. I got it. I'm assuming you did.
Yeah.
That wider access is coming out in April. So, and again, you and I got a couple tweets on Twitter asking, you know, why they stuck on this preview. Because no one's doing it. No one's doing the bulk of this stuff for today. This is all things you're working on over the summer. That's really ready for, you know, August. Like, you know, certainly by the time May rolls around, this stuff needs to be in production because certainly a lot of people are going to be using it heavily in June.
Yeah, I've been told informally that the target for this is the start of the summer, so the start of the redeployment season, so that it's ready and all the kinks are worked out in time for August, September.
Yeah, we should be getting our gear in April sometime, and so the iPads will just sit there until all that's ready. So, Apple Classroom is in the App Store now.
But you can't do anything with it.
Yeah, there's nothing. It's like, what is it? Yeah, you can download it and open it. It's like, cool. It's
yeah. You can see the splash screen and you can get a link to the help booklet. Basically, what this is that the Apple Classroom app is delivered through the App Store. It's not built into iOS. But what you need to do is you need to deliver a new payload from your MDM server to both teacher and student iPads to make this work. And there is documentation about this payload. I had a look at the documentation, and it is incredibly complicated. It's a very complex nested structure of classroom classes, rosters, teachers, certificates that are used to authenticate different groups and so on. It's not absolutely clear to me what those are for just yet. But basically, all the student iPads and the teacher's iPads need to have this education configuration payload delivered to them in order for them to be controllable through Classroom and for the teacher device to have Classroom up and running. And obviously that's something you want to be quite careful about how you set that up, because you don't want to give the teacher setting to any student device so that the students can go and look at other students' devices. That would obviously be a mistake. So The requirements for this are student devices must be supervised. Teacher devices don't have to be, which is very good for schools where teachers have iPads deployed in a kind of BYOD scenario. Whether or not the school owns them or not is not the point. But the point is that the teacher devices aren't necessarily supervised. Student devices obviously need to be. You need the education configuration payload for both student and teacher iPads. And then the teacher iPad can actually be quite old, right? The teacher iPad and the student iPad, if it's a one-to-one deployment, can be A5-based or better for classroom support. So that means third-generation Retina iPad or the Mini 1 can both be a teacher iPad and a student iPad in Apple Classroom. Now, it also says in the requirements that if it's a shared iPad situation, it has to be an A8-based iPad or later, so a Pro Air 2 Mini 4. But I suspect that that's actually just the shared iPad requirements restated in the classroom support. I think that's what that means as much as anything else. So I think classroom is actually the most impactful part of this for existing deployments, because it will work on many of the deployments that are already out there using older devices, as long as you supervise your students' devices, right? And I'm pretty sure back in 2014 we told everybody to do that, so I hope you guys have done it. But it's clear to me, Bradley, that supervision is the thing for schools now. Like, if you're not supervising those devices, I really don't think you're doing your deployment correctly anymore.
Like we said, it's just everything new coming out that's targeted towards EDU seems to require supervision.
Yeah, yeah. And there's lots of things that you might want to do that supervision requires. And again, the cost of getting supervised if you didn't is very, very high. Basically, you've got to wipe your devices and start again. So it's looking to me like almost all of this stuff is really a gift to institutional deployments. There's not a lot of comfort here for BYOD, is there?
No, I don't, because when you look at things that like DEP brings you and all these new tools, mm-hmm. It's getting to where there are going to be things you want to do that you're just going to be like, oh, we can't do that because we're BYOD. We can't do that because we're BYOD. So yeah. What are you, all the simplicity that BYOD supposedly brings you of not having to deal with all of this.
Yep.
You're dealing
with it every day.
Right.
Instead. Yeah. No, you make a good point. You know, think about it like a strategy tax. Yeah, your BYOD, like always, right? BYOD, what it does is it promises simplicity, promises ease. But what it actually does is it takes all this complexity that we deal with every week on the show, and it just makes that everybody's problem every hour of every day. Differences between platforms, differences between devices, unconfigured, unsupervised, easily breakable configurations, and so on. Students needing help with things that in reality you should be dealing with for them. And I just think that I cannot see any compelling reason, educationally or technologically, to do BYOD. I really can't.
Yeah, I mean, I would have argued against it years ago on philosophical levels, yep. But now there's too many technical arguments against it.
Yeah, and this is only going to get worse as well, because not only is everything that's new and good that we've wanted for years coming as supervised-only settings, but some older settings are also going to go supervised in the future as well, probably in iOS 10 or later. So it really looks to me like institutional deployments with supervision is going to be key for competent iOS deployment in the future.
So some other new things we got, new sysadmin options that you can control.
Very excited about some of these.
Yes. Home screen layout. This will be great for like, if you've got younger classes that you want them organized in a certain way, or even mm-hmm. kiosk-style deployments where you just want things to look a certain way,
yep.
That'll be nice.
Also really good for educational situations for people with additional support needs as well, so that they always find the things in the same place, which can sometimes be very important for them. You can, in that home screen layout settings, what you do is you basically put together a dictionary of dictionaries of bundle IDs of apps. So you can say, like, here are the apps that go in the dock, right? You can put up to 6 bundle IDs in the dock. And then you can actually create folders. And then you can say, here are the IDs that go in this folder, and here's the folder name. So you can actually do a very complex and rich home screen layout based on this. Now, here's one thing I'm not sure about is, once you've set the device up like that, can the user then change it if you give them an initial setting, or does that strictly enforce it at all times? That's what I'm not sure about, and I wonder. I'd be quite interested to see what happens with that.
You can also put a device into lost mode. Be handy if like a device is kind of gone missing on campus.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I think that'll be nice. And also, I think you can make it beep.
I would think so.
Yep, in the way that you can, which would be nice for iPads that have just been misplaced in the school or whatever.
Prevent activation lock from being activated.
That's a first. We haven't had that before. We've had the activation lock bypass code before for supervised devices, but you can now actually make it so that activation lock will not be engaged on your devices, which is good.
Yeah, I agree. That'll be nice, like kind of end of the year, end of the lease kind of thing. You're not having to track down kids to turn things off.
Yep. And I think that's a reasonable trade-off if you have devices in DEP. So if you've got them in DEP, then having activation lock on as well maybe is a bit overkill, considering the consequences of if a student leaves and you don't get their Apple ID information or whatever. Just not having to worry about that would be quite nice, I think, actually.
Yeah, I 100% agree, because that device would be basically a brick at that point.
Yeah, yep. We've also got, there's new settings for notifications. And what this is you know, when you go into notifications for a specific app, you can choose things like, does it show in the lock screen? Does it show a banner or an alert or nothing? Does it beep? Does it badge the icon? You can actually force all those settings for a specific app. So you give the bundle identifier and then you give those settings, and those settings are enforced on the device. And where I'm going to use this straight away is I'm going to use it for iTunes U. Because sometimes kids turn off notifications for iTunes U, and those notifications are things like messages from the teacher about your homework or marks that you've handed in or something like that. So that's where I'm going to test that first, is to just force everybody to get the notifications for iTunes U. And you can also, this is a separate setting, you can prevent the user from changing the notification settings as well, which I'll be interested to see how that works, because what if a student installs a game and the game just goes nuts with notifications and you've prevented them from changing the notification settings, they might want to be able to change those settings for good rather than for evil. So it'll be interesting to see how that works. You might end up pushing out various bundle ID settings just to turn particularly annoying notifications off from time to time.
Yeah, good point. Good point. Yep. Think about the other end of that, where they might want to disable them for good means.
Yeah. A couple of other things, Bradley. We finally got app blacklisting, which is great. And what this is you can provide a list of blacklisted bundle IDs, and that will prevent those named bundle IDs from being shown or run. So the app can still be installed on the device, but it will not appear, and it will not be launchable either from a URL scheme or by clicking it on the home screen. Very interesting possibilities there around things like geolocation-based profiles or iBeacon-based profiles in some MDM servers. So you could have it that, in principle, when an iPad enters your geofence at school, you push out a whitelisted bundle ID profile, which only allows school-approved apps to run inside school. And then whenever the device goes out of your geofence, that profile gets removed and any app that's installed on the device gets to run. That could be pretty cool.
So it's not like Ruby. It's basically doing the app hiding. I know there's a protocol for that, and you combine that with the iBeacon. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, it's not clear to me though if this overrides age restrictions for apps. I suspect it does in the lower sense, but maybe not in the upper sense. And what I mean by that is if an app is blacklisted, but it is below the minimum threshold or the maximum threshold for apps, say like Snapchat, which is rated 4+, you could blacklist Snapchat even though the students would normally be able to run it. But I suspect that whitelisting an app maybe doesn't override that. So say like Amazon Workspaces, which is 17+, for example. If I whitelist that app, but all the devices have got a 12+ rating on them, will that app appear? I don't know the answer yet. I haven't tested it, but I suspect it's probably not a way to punch through the upper age restriction limit, but it might be a way to prevent things coming in below it.
Yeah. Also got one I have often wanted to have, prevent changing of the wallpaper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if I would I would deploy that one. I don't know that it matters that much. And I think there's an element of personalization that the kids enjoy there, although some of the wallpapers they set would make your eyes bleed, that's for sure. I once had one kid, I'll tell you this story, Bradley, I had one kid who he set his wallpaper to a screenshot of his home screen. So yeah, like, in behind all the icons, it had icons. I was just like, I picked it up and I was like, I've never seen an iOS this broken before. What on earth is happening here? I was like, oh, hang on, that's the wallpaper. I was very confused by that.
Well, I was thinking more like in kiosk type situations.
Yeah, in those situations, it absolutely makes sense. And probably shared iPad situations as well. Although, I mean that in the sort of lowercase shared iPad, you know, not the formal system where users are separate, but, you know, in a situation where you've got some iPads and multiple people are using them, you probably don't want people to be able to change that stuff because you might not know who did it. And if they put something offensive there, for example, you're suddenly into being a policeman.
Next, a couple more things. You can put on the lock, you can put asset tagging information on the lock screen.
Yes, and I discovered that the Casper Suite 9.9, which is the version that's going to support this, in there you can put placeholders. Remember we talked about placeholders for profiles when we talked about email? Mm-hmm. You could potentially put there, this iPad belongs to dollar username, right? And this, it would say on the lock screen, this iPad belongs to Fraser Spears, or this iPad belongs to Joe Blogs, or whatever. So that's going to be quite a cool little trick to do. I think. And then the last one is you can also prevent changing the device name. So this is for things like AirPlay, AirDrop, and so on, where people want to see the device name, having the user's name. Peoples can go in there, and we've seen this quite a lot, people putting in emojis instead of their name and things like that. So prevent changing the device name is actually going to be something that I would definitely put on when the time comes.
Yeah, because like we mentioned in the past show, like that shows up on your Wi-Fi network and...
Yeah. So there's some really cool stuff in there. Even if you're not necessarily going to do shared iPad straight away, or Apple Classroom will be available. As far as I can tell, Bradley, that'll basically work as soon as your MDM can deliver that education configuration profile. Where your MDM gets that information, I'm not sure. I think in Casper in particular, I think the way it's going to work is you can set up users in Casper and you can create classes as well, because they had that for Casper Focus before. So I think it's going to take that information and put it into the education configuration payload for Apple Classroom.
Yeah, again, this is all stuff, you know, you're probably not going to be rolling out in production this school year. I mean, this school year is going to be over before you know it.
Yeah, we're basically done at this point, aren't we?
Yeah, we've been done since January.
Pretty much. We only work from August to Christmas, right?
Yes, really August. And through October, because once it's Thanksgiving, you're done. Nah, we're
yeah,
kidding.
Well, you get holiday in between times there, don't you?
True.
I'm very jealous. Yeah. Anyway, I think it was a good event. I don't know that it was. I mean, it was. I don't think it was dynamite in any sense. I mean, most of what we saw with the iPhone and the iPad was basically technology we already knew about, put into different smaller form factors, and that's not nothing. That's important. But of course, for us, you know, schools that are refreshing this year, this was the event where the iPad that we're going to live with came out, and we've got to make this call now between the iPad Air 2 for a bit less money, or the Pro for a bit more money, and trade off that storage as well. I'm personally at the moment leaning towards the Pro, but I still have to have the budget conversation about that as well.
Yeah, that's where I'm at, and we're getting final. I think my next to final quote today, we're still making some final changes. So,
good stuff. Well, we shall put this show up basically as is for our Patreon pals. Thank you guys for supporting us, and this show will also go out on our main feed. Today is Tuesday. We'll put it out on Tuesday for Patreon, and probably Thursday or Friday, Bradley, for everyone else.
So thanks for supporting us, guys. Have a great week.
Okay, bye.